Hello, my friends. Welcome to the Hello Tomorrow podcast again. I have a special bonus episode for you today. I recorded last week with my brilliant friend, Usha. We cover a lot of ground in this one, including a few things I haven't explored yet, like the consumer side problem of the AI job displacement and why the things we call soft skills should immediately be rebranded as premium skills. Now, by the way, if you like this conversational format, want me to do more of this, please let me know. You can ping me anytime at future@hellotomorrowpodcast.com. future@hellotomorrowpodcast.com. Or just leave a comment wherever you watch or listen. I should see that. Without further ado, let's get into it with Usha.
Hi, everyone. My name is Usha. I'm an executive coach and consultant. I help leaders build high-performing, human-centric organizations. And my passion in this moment is really seeing how AI fits into that picture. And more importantly, how we can reimagine organizations and reimagine leadership such that we're actually making the most of what we as humans do uniquely, what we as humans are uniquely capable of, and create more and more space for us to be human in the workforce and bring our innovation, empathy, creativity, and then strategically outsource the rest to AI. And I'm excited to be having this conversation with Josh today.
Awesome. What's the name of your podcast, Usha?
I am the host of Optimized for Human.
Fabulous. Awesome. Awesome new podcast. I'm super excited to chat with you. This is going to be super cool. My name's Josh Allen Dykstra. Hi, everybody. I'm the host of the Hello Tomorrow podcast, where we intersect what's happening in the world of work with current events in 15 minutes or less every week. And yes, you can probably tell already, Usha and I have a lot in common and probably just tons of things to talk about. I have no shortage.
Well, I'm very excited, Josh, because I know one of the things that you're really trying to bring into the space of the future and as a futurist is optimism and to really be an optimistic futurist. And there's also this element of like really designing our future that I know you've spoken about that I think is really crucial and critical. And I think organizations play a really big role in that, in all of those little micro decisions that happen from boardrooms to executive rooms to every corner of an organization, I think really accumulates and shapes our world in meaningful ways. And I'd love to start by asking you, what are you most optimistic about when you think about our future?
Yeah. Yeah. I was hoping you're going to go there and so we could talk about optimism for a second. Cause the funny thing about optimism is I used to have a misunderstanding about this. I think, there's some people out there who I really believe are born optimists, right? They just kind of like come into the world and like the glass is half full and everything's going to be fine. And I am not that guy, right? Like that is not me. I am definitely a chosen optimist, right? I've been through some hard stuff in my life, as have probably most people listening to this. I just find that optimism is a better strategy for life. And so I choose to be an optimist, and I choose to, because my perspective on this is that optimism is a rebellion strategy. That optimism, like, rebels who fight for a better future are always optimists because they have to believe that something better can exist. Otherwise, they wouldn't put their lives on the line for this thing, right? So I believe that, you know, this kind of revolutionary thing that needs to happen in the world requires optimism, whether you were born that way or not. And so that's the first thing I wanted to say about optimism. I'm curious how you react to that. What's your thoughts on that?
I love that. I'm smiling because I actually am one of those people who's naturally quite optimistic. I don't know. I was having a conversation with a friend about this yesterday about how like my baseline is often like pretty joyous. Like I'll enjoy most things, and I'm critical less often than maybe I should be. There's downsides to this strategy. Don't get me wrong. But generally, I just really believe in like the goodness of humanity and the like, you know, the beauty of this world. And I really do believe that that will endure. And I think it'll only endure when there are people who are in that kind of rebellion around the status quo. The other thing that I think, like, just to like contextualize for us is, like, if we zoom all the way back out, this is actually like in like humanity's history, you know, which who even knows when it started. I mean, I know there's science around when it started and all of that, but we can't conceptualize, that's what I mean, around like when it even began. But this is actually one of the best times. We have the least rate of death, lowest mortality, lowest poverty. And, you know, there's ways in which death was actually just casual and just happened all the time, even just a few centuries ago, maybe even just a century ago, and in a way that we don't accept anymore. So I think there's a lot to be actually celebrating and being optimistic about, and we do lose perspective on that. And I think that's great too, because we're constantly striving.
Yeah. I think, yeah, so hopefully listeners can, you know, find yourself in any of these places. It's fine, right? If you feel like we need to be looking at the reality of what's happening in the world, you're right, we do. And, right, I think we do need to have a picture of a future, because one of the things that I would also pull in here is, are you familiar with appreciative inquiry, Usha? I think you might be. Yeah. So this idea, one of the tenets, so appreciative inquiry, for listeners who might not be familiar, it's the OG AI, but appreciative inquiry, really fabulous field of study. And on the surface, it sounds like, oh, positively framed questions, appreciative inquiry, but it's actually so much deeper than that. It's actually a philosophy for life and change and how humans actually move through the world in a more kind of positive, constructive way. And one of the tenets of the OG AI is that humans, we move towards our picture of the future, right? So Usha knows this, but for folks who don't, right? So what we do, humans, we just naturally move towards whatever picture of the future we have. And so this is why I think optimism becomes such an important part of the strategy, because if we can't picture something better, we're not going to go there, right? We're not going to build that. We're just going to kind of keep going down the path we're on, which I think most people would agree. This is not like, if you just take the path we're on and keep going on it, that's not a future we want to live in. So we need to do some different things.
So then what is a picture of the future that you're holding in this moment in service of that kind of optimism and an optimistic future?
Yeah. I think that was the original question you asked me, and I totally derailed us. Thank you. I tend to think, and I want to hear your thoughts on this too. When I think about this question, I think that we need a different organizing story of life for the future. And so what I mean by that is, right now, work/business/capitalism is the organizing story of life, right? It determines largely where you work, how much you have to work, in the US, whether you get healthcare or not, right? It determines how much discretionary money you have to spend, how much fun you can have outside of work. It largely determines where you live. Did I already say that? I don't know. Right? It determines so many things about your life. It is kind of the sun that our lives orbit around, is this thing, work, business, capitalism. It's the thing that organizes humanity right now. And I think that story is failing us. I think a story that orbits, it's right there in the name, right? Capitalism, right? The belief system is about capital and the people who hold capital. And I think we need a different ism in the future, right? We need something else to orbit our lives around, to orient our lives around, other than just money and the making more of it. Otherwise, I think we're going to end up down the same path that we're on now. So that's the kind of future I want, is a future with a different ism at the center. I don't know what that is yet, but I think there's lots of things we could organize around that would be way better than just the making of more money. So whether it's learning or exploration or love or just life, caring for life on the planet. Like, there's so many other things that we could orient our existence around. And so that's probably the, that's, I went really big picture with that. But yeah, I'm curious, how do you think about this, Susha?
I think there's this fundamental question we're starting to face as AI starts to disrupt our world more and more, which is, how much do we need to work? I think there, you know, again, if we go back to history for a second, there was a moment where in time, especially with the kind of, particularly around like agricultural revolution, where people just, every person in the family, as long as you're old enough, like everyone was just working all day for the most part. This whole concept of the weekend didn't even exist. So just to feed ourselves and exist in a village required a ton of work. Of course, there's classes and, you know, there's hierarchies around capital even back then. And that changed the equation a little bit. Yeah. But in general, like, making food, feeding people, taking care of our basic needs actually required a lot of like manpower back right. in the day, in a way that we, you know, have already seen a huge drop in as we step into the knowledge economy. And I think we're going to continue to see a drop in that. And I don't think that what that means is that humans don't need to work anymore. I think what we work on really changes, because I think it's less, we have this possibility of, it's no longer about time and how much time I put in, where I clock in and clock out. I think it actually, we have this opportunity where it now becomes about, what can I create? What can you create? How does that serve the purpose of what we're trying to create together in this organization, in this city, in this society as a whole? So I think there's massive possibility for how we start to reimagine what is the purpose we serve in a workplace. Because again, going back to history, the first large-ish organizations were factories. So the humans were actually the robots. We were the robot standards. We were the cog in the wheel. I have to do this to the widget. You have to do that to the widget. We're producing widgets at the end of the day. And actually, my time in often was directly correlated with my output. And that's not really true anymore. I don't always, when I clock out, it's not like my brain stops thinking about ideas or solving the problems of my work life, right? And I think this actually now, there's more possibility for what that might look like, what might happen. And this is where in the organizational space, I really want leaders to start thinking about what is the best use of the humans in our space? Like, how can we spend more time speaking with our customers, like empathizing, connecting, really understanding things, using our judgment, directing, making decisions, rather than pushing paper around, which we all know is definitely a big part of our life and our world. And so that's what I'm most optimistic about. I think there's a future in which there's more creative, we just live in a more creative, innovative world, and it becomes more about designing things and making them better rather than, you know, making as much money as possible. I know that's a big, you know, loaded topic, and there's all kinds of underpinnings there that are psychological and not just, this is a setup of society. But I think this is an interesting moment to disrupt that.
Yeah. 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 How do you think we get there? Right. Cause I, you know, when I listen to you talk, I'm like, hell yeah, let's do that. Right. Like, let's get rid of all this robotic mechanical crap that I don't want to do and you don't want to do and nobody, like, but there's a lot of stuff out there that people would probably say, yeah, I'd rather not do that. How do we get from here to there? Do you think?
Well, I do think the psychological underpinning needs to be, I think there's a fundamental value system that we're operating under right now within capitalism that I think is actually driven in part, at least, by this deep sense of like scarcity and trauma around never having enough, never being enough. Mm-hmm. And I think that is actually what drives a lot of ambition. And I'll just say, like, my own personal journey with that, like, achievement has always been a really strong value for me, starting from like school and like I must get A's and all of that. And one of the shifts that I've noticed in my own life is recognizing where that's coming from, that feeling of I'm not enough and I must prove myself and I must achieve and win the validation of others. And I feel this deep sense of scarcity and I need to have more and more and more to feel enough, to now having a little bit more space around that. I'm not going to say that I'm feeling perfect in any way, shape or form. I still, that drive for me still comes not just from a desire for mastery, but also from a desire for safety, security. But I think there is, I think that's something we have to reckon with at an individual level and at a societal level on the one hand. Also, just on the other hand, I think we need basic needs to be met, because I think that actually frees us up to move past our own trauma. And I've really seen this as someone who's lived in New Zealand for many years and now coming here with just healthcare as an example. I just never worried about it when I was living there. And I have to say, moving back here, it was such a different equation around, you know, work and finding a job, because it was this like fundamental thing. And I was surprised by how much I reckoned with that. And I say that as someone who has a lot of privilege and I can easily afford to buy my own healthcare without an employer. But it was such a visceral thing of like, that social fabric doesn't exist here. That core value of if you are vulnerable, there is a fabric that's there to catch you. And so, and again, I think with the AI question, that's a big part of the equation, which is actually, what does that mean if more and more of the work that needs to be done to run a society no longer needs humans to be doing that work?
I think I'm glad you brought that up too, because I don't really see a possible future that makes sense without some sort of basic needs UBI like thing being offered, right? I don't really know how that happens. And I've kind of argued, you know, in one of my episodes for that we think about this more like a shared wealth fund, you know, like in Alaska, where they, you know, the people, citizens of Alaska all share the wealth, and they see it as, you know, from the mineral rights and the oil rights and all of those things that happen. And everyone just kind of gets paid kind of dividends based on just because they live there, right? We're all caretaking this land, and so we all share in the benefits from this. And I think that's the way to think about AI, is that we all helped create this, right? Like, none of this exists without infrastructure that was publicly funded. None of it exists without knowledge and information and language that was like literally created by all of us, that these certain companies now were able to mine, right? Like, none of this would be possible without all of us. And so for a certain few companies to be able to, you know, kind of suck up all of that wealth, I think is really deeply not okay. What do you have thoughts on that?
Here's my like both worry and optimism in that space, because I think there is that recalibration, because there's all kinds of things that I'm seeing, at least, of like huge percentages of people being unemployed. And actually, we're seeing this right now. I believe Amazon has just laid off several thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, a lot of people, and with the intention of replacing them with robots.
The number so this is 14,000 right now or something like that. But yeah, it's probably more. We're going to be more.
So it is happening. And I think that there is that move. And what I'm worried about the most is that kind of what happens in this moment as we're still transitioning. What I'm optimistic about is that if you play that all the way out, let's say 90% of humanity is no longer necessary to run organizations as they do right now. So 90% of our workforces get laid off. Well, then 90% of the people you've just laid off will no longer participate in this capitalistic society that also is thrives on me buying things. I will no longer go to Amazon and purchase fun things anymore.
Yeah.
I am unemployed, along with 90% of humanity, which means there's not enough jobs, too many, whatever, right?
Yeah.
And so suddenly the only companies that will start to be okay are the ones that assure our basic needs, like food and shelter and whatever else, right? Amazon certainly will not make the cut, I will tell you that. Hmm. And so the companies will plummet as well. So there, I think what capitalism misses is how deeply interconnected we are as humanity and as a society. And when you start to mess with that fabric, and it's a house of cards, the entire thing will plummet. So I'm optimistic that actually people are the ones fueling wealth to the top, whatever, you know, organizations, people, etc. And they're making these decisions. What I'm most worried about is the messy middle, because it'll take some time. Like right now, it's not 90%, but it's 14,000 workers within Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also really optimistic that actually this has happened before. This is not the first time. When the personal computer became, when the computer became a thing, it wasn't just like that gigantic machine that like existed in NASA, but actually I can have one at my home. The work of people's work just changed. You know, you no longer needed secretaries who were, or typewriters, I think.
Yeah.
Whatever. There was a whole slew of people who were doing a bunch of things that no longer needed to be done, but there's new things that now need to be done. And again, my hope and my like provocation for leaders is you have the opportunity to start thinking about that now and start shaping that and designing for that now of, let's free up our humans to do what they do best. Let's stop thinking about this as a cost and efficiency equation and start thinking about it as a growth and innovation equation. So you go for it.
No, please finish.
I think with the growth piece, there's part of it is like it's possibilities you can't quite fathom right now. So the first and easiest place will be to say, let's just get rid of all of these people, let's say, who make customer calls and replace them with chatbots, you know. But there's a different possibility of like, what can they do for you in terms of retaining customers, bringing in new customers? How can you translate the skills that they have? How can you upskill them in new ways to actually grow your business and reimagine the work that needs to be done fundamentally? So that's my provocation for leaders.
Yeah. I think that's a really good one. I think, the leaders, we can kind of see this in one of two directions, right? Where we're like racing to the bottom to cut the costs out of our companies, right? So I see that happening a lot right now, at least in the headlines. It's what it feels like. There's a lot of cost cutting. It's like, we can do this cheaper if we replace humans with AIs. The other way to think about this, though, to your point, is to say, well, what actually could we do with AIs and our great humans, right? Like, could we go to a place that we haven't gone before, right? Like, what could we build? What could we create? And it really does feel like scarcity and defensiveness at this moment. And kind of a real like short-sightedness in terms of like, you know, cutting the expenses out of your company is not growth. Right. Like, so even kind of to your point, like about like consumers keep this thing moving. Right. I think that's a really insightful point. And it, you know, Henry Ford figured this out right 100 years ago. That's why we got 8-hour work days. Cause he's like, if I don't give people any leisure time, they're not going to need cars. Right. So it's like, it's a similar thing, right? But we're maybe having to relearn here, or like, I guess, you know, billionaires will have to relearn this lesson. But yeah, it doesn't compute, right? It doesn't make sense for Amazon to cut the legs out from underneath them in their consumeristic empire, right? So that just fundamentally doesn't make sense. Even in the current model, that doesn't make any sense. And then Yeah. So, but then there's this other idea too of like, okay, what could we be doing that's future focused, that's growth focused, right? It's not like, what do we build next? What do we innovate? What do we create? Like, I kind of don't understand the perspective of leaders that think that they can do that by getting rid of humans, right? They're kind of like, in my view, that's a fundamental misunderstanding of what AI is good at. Do you see it this way, right? Like, I think AI is really good at these kind of robotic, mechanized things. It's good at like, but is it good at like thinking laterally? No, right? Is it good at, you know, coming up with like strange connections that humans do, right? Like, is it good at being wise and knowing context and being able to connect to different senses? Like, no, it's not good at any of these things, right? Do you see where I'm going? Like, cutting out the, like, right? I worry that organizational leaders right now, they're being a little trigger happy and cutting out, right? They're trying to grow via cutting versus via innovation and creativity, which I don't think you get from AIs. Do you see it that way?
I 100% see it that way. And there's a couple of things I want to say in that. One, I want to name, there was a Dutch company that pulled the trigger about a year ago, I think. It's been some time. Specifically to replace a lot of their functions with AI, and are now hiring people back desperately because it didn't work. Right. And I don't want that to sound like there will be lots of functions that actually can be replaced. I think Amazon is actually probably a really good example of that. I think there probably are a lot of their functions that can be replaced by bots, you know. So there are like that's real, that exists. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot more that exists that can't be replaced. And that's the equation that I'm not sure we're thinking about fully.
Right.
And while I think the trap a little bit is that AI mimics wisdom.
Mm.
And so I think we're not clocking that quite yet, because there's a real distinction from human innovation and creativity and decision-making and judgment, because we have a ton of context that we don't even know how to codify. There's this, like, subconsciously, if you look at how many decisions on average we make a day, I think Cornell studied this a little while back, it's 35,000 decisions a day that we make as humans. And that's a mix of conscious and unconscious, subconscious decisions. And we don't even know how to codify that. You know, I walk into a room, I see somebody, I just feel comfortable or I feel uncomfortable.
Right.
My brain is processing information. It's not just like, you know, like intuition in many ways is, processing information below the conscious level of engagement with the world, right? So I think AI can do a great job of like mimicking wisdom, mimicking judgment. It'll sound like the right thing, but there's a ton of context I don't know that it can ever fully absorb.
I think to build on that too, I think many people may not like understand the technology itself, right? So like the technology itself, what it does is make stuff up, right? Like that is like, so if we're talking about an LLM, right? So for listeners, right? Most people, most of us are engaging with AI, you know, through a chatbot of some kind, right? It's like ChatGPT or like a Gemini or Claude or something, right? Like, so if you're having that engagement, that technology, the way that it works is to make stuff up. Like it is probabilistic, statistical, what they call autoregressive. So it predicts the next word by looking at the last word. And because it's been fed so much language, like all of the language on the internet language, it's really good. at predicting what the next word should be, but that's what it's doing. Like it's make like the reason this thing works is because it's making things up. It's not being wise. It's not pulling from a source of intuition or embodied wisdom or even multiple senses, right? It's just drawing informationally, statistically, into these probabilities. And so if we don't kind of understand that that's what this, like, it's, so people talk about hallucinations, right? And I don't know that that's really the right way to think about it anymore. Like now that we understand this better, it's like, no, like it's not a hallucination. Like it's, this is how it works. Like it works by making things up. And as it gets better, right? As it kind of like, we kind of bolt other technologies into this, it gets better at fact checking itself and it gets, and more data in there increases the likelihood that what it's saying is kind of factually true. That's not really like, this is not a calculator, right? This is not a machine that can't make an error, right? This is a machine that it like works by making things up. So I think that's just a really important thing for people to understand, because you're right. It really feels like, it feels sometimes like there's a tiny philosopher inside my computer, right? Yeah. It's like, oh my God, this thing, it is so wise. It knows me so well. And it's like, no, like that is not, that's not really what's happening in here. Do you see it this way too, Usha?
Yeah, I think the way that I think about this is, there's like a fundamental equation change that happens when you're looking at mechanical systems versus living systems. And it is the whole in the mechanical systems, the whole is equal to the sum of its parts. 2 + 2 = 4. That's how the mechanical systems work. In living systems, the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. So if two people come together with ideas, insights, you'll get more innovation than, you know, just the innovation of person A and the innovation of person B, because it's a living system. The, you know, it's a fundamentally different way in which it's wired, where things connect and come together in unpredictable ways more than anything else. I don't think you can imagine ahead of time what it might look like. And so with this machine that actually its entire basis, at least in this moment, again, who knows where it's going to go, but its entire basis is looking at all of the pre-existing sets of data and trying to smush them together in every which way. And again, there's lots of like wisdom that it does spurt out, you know, that's usually the human's wisdom that it's like mimicking and replaying,
that's right.
You know, but that's right. The whole piece about like novelty, somebody was actually another guest in one of my podcast episodes. He was mentioning how, let's assume that we get to the place where we can create like a Josh bot. It knows you so well that it can talk to me as though it's you. And you stop feeding it. You decide to go off the grid and live in a cabin. And I'm still talking to Josh bot. And you come back 10 years later, you emerge from the cabin. You have changed fundamentally, probably in a decade's time. Like we're all very different, right? But the Josh bot is still the same Josh that was there 10 years ago that it's sort of absorbed and mimicked, right? So it just doesn't grow and evolve because it's not a living system fundamentally.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting thought experiment. I think the other thing that's probably good for people to know too is that what's happening in the science of this, right? If you talk, like if you listen to the technologists who are building these things talk about them, they really, what they're trying to do, it seems clear to me at least, is they're mimicking living systems, right? It's the whole idea of, you know, the way that these LLMs work, right? This is like neural net technology, rather they're mimicking the way, they're trying to figure out the way that brains work. And if you even like look at the way that these things were designed, and this started decades ago, like before we were born, Usha, right? They like, there were, you know, there were scientists that figured out like, this could probably work. Like we could probably teach a machine the process of learning like a brain, like a human brain does, right? And they didn't have the computational power to do it back in the 70s, but now we do, right? And that's why we've seen such such jumps, you know, in the last 5 years. But that's what they're trying to do, right? They're and that's what I see happening. And I think we're going to see this more and more, in really literal ways as humanoid looking robots come online. Like, this is probably an inevitability also. So it really is going to, I think at best, like, this forces us as humans to have some really deep questions, some deep inquiries about what are we here for? Like, what do we want to be about? What do we desire as a species? Like, what do we actually want? Right? Because, and I think what I've been, I'm curious what you think about this is, I've been trying to think about or try to encourage people to start to separate the idea of jobs from the idea of meaningful work. Because I don't know of anybody who wants a job. Like, I could take it or leave it, right? Like, you make me like show up to earn a paycheck, to like stay alive, to get my health insurance, to do some crap that I don't really want to do. And that's how most people, I think about a job. It's like, I got to do it, right? It's a pain, but it's like a necessity of life or some stuff. Yeah, some stuff, right? Like, meaningful work, on the other hand, is something that people love. Like, we love, and we need to kind of like broaden our thinking of what the work word means. I've been encouraging people to think about this in terms of like contribution, maybe, instead of work, right? Because work, right, has a lot of noise and baggage. But like, if you think about this as like a meaningful contribution, maybe that's a better way for people, right? Like, people need that. I think this is an intrinsic human thing to feel like I'm contributing. So, but this might be where we start to have these conversations in a more meaningful way, like that we can start to say, okay, yeah, no, these things are going to go in the job bucket and it's fine. Let the robots take them. But like, where's the meaningful contribution that I want to make? That's going to still be really important to me and to you and to how do we teach our kids? And what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think there's something in there around, first of all, like, purpose is part of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You know, like, it is one of our fundamental intrinsic needs. There's something around like the core value system underpinning what you're describing versus capitalism and kind of
right
where we're at right now. And I think the value system right now is like security. Like, why do we work? At the core, a lot of it is security. There's obviously lots of other things there. There's status, there's meaningful work, there's other things, there's purpose. But at the very core of it, a lot of the decision-making comes down to, can I pay my rent? Do I have healthcare?
Totally. You know?
And really a lot of the equation, I think, for a lot of people is like to hit escape velocity on that, to make enough money that's no longer the equation. And then I can go do meaningful work. And the value system that you're describing is fundamentally about like, what am I in service of? Who am I in service of? So suddenly I'm not just like a cog in the wheel, punching away, pushing papers around. I'm actually like, there's a constituency that I'm serving. My customer is someone that I'm in service of, someone that I'm creating for and hopefully creating with. And I think it's that value shift that needs to happen. And part of the problem, I do think, is there's a little bit, I think, of the social media effect happening at scale with like people in general. And by the social media effect, I mean, the negative voices get amplified way more because that drives attention. So that's you right. Assume that a lot of people are holding these particular beliefs and thoughts and values, when actually it's a few loud people who are on the extreme, but a lot more people are like somewhere in the middle. And I think so. There is a little bit of like, let's just call a spade a spade. There are some people who are making decisions around AI, like within these companies, like not all of their intentions are pure. Their intentions, in fact, are profit driven. And it is a race Everyone's trying to just get there as fast as possible. I don't think that ethics are high on their list of priorities. And I don't blame them necessarily, because that's the system that we've created, which is get there as fast as possible, drive as much profit as possible. And there's too much at stake. But I think most of the rest of us actually care about being responsible with this. We care about the impact this is having. So there is something about like amplifying those voices. And again, to your piece around like future design, how can we like recenter the story to be one that is optimistic and meaningful and responsible? It doesn't have, the way we're driving towards this, it doesn't have to be.
Yeah, that just makes me think of your original question about, you know, what's the picture of the future that I envision? And, you know, maybe it just took me like 40 minutes to get there. But like I really think this is it, right? Like for me, the picture of the future is one where we have fundamentally reflected on what the role of work is in our lives, and that we've adopted a different story to put at the center. And it's one that allows us much more freedom to be able to live our lives in some sort of meaningful contribution to something that matters to us. And that we develop what I've been calling the commons, right? This commons area of infrastructure that allows us to take care of our basic needs, and then we share in the wealth of all of these things that we've collectively built to allow us to really do the things that feel meaningful, you know, most of the time. And I think that's a world we can build, right? But to your point, it requires a really deep look at what we value and what we desire and what we actually want. And you know, what we're willing to change. This is a very different way of thinking about life. I think it's one that a lot of people would love to get on board with. They maybe just don't think it's possible. And so to that, I would just say, you know, the future never seems possible, like, until it happens, right? Like, crazy awesome things, right? They're always impossible until somebody does it. And yeah, I think we can build this, you know, if enough of us really care enough to say, yeah, this status quo thing is not working for me. And I think we're feeling that. I think we're hearing that. I think there's a lot of rumblings. And I think a lot of rebels are waking up and saying, yeah, no, this isn't gonna work for me. I want something new.
Absolutely. And I think I love that piece around like just such a different vision of the role of work in our lives, the role we play as humans, as citizens in this world, and as part of a community, and kind of reframing some of that. The other thing that I think is like worth pointing out is I think what's human is going to become more and more premium. In the same way that now we love handwritten letters, like how exciting is it to get mail that's actually from somebody thinking of you, who could have, you know, sent you a text message, who could have sent you an email, but they chose to write. So I think as AI, you know, penetrates industries and suddenly we have like AI actors, etc., we're going to value the human ones more, because that's just how we're wired. We like and want that. It's wired into us. And no matter how great a job these companies do and just people do, we're always going to come back to the thing that's authentic and real, because that's part of our core wiring. And yeah, I'm excited for that. I think there's a world in which for me, like the vision is one where we prioritize connection more, we prioritize community more, and purpose and meaningful work more, because we have the time to do it and our basic needs are actually met because they can be. Yeah. Well, maybe we can close out with this question, because one of the things that stands out to me in what you're saying is I think there is this sense of powerlessness that I think a lot of people feel, that the decisions around this are actually out of our realm of influence. It's happening with OpenAI. It's happening with Meta and like all of these, just to name a few, you know, but these companies are shaping it, and that we're, you know, we're just going to have to sit here and wait and see how it all rolls out. And and I don't think that's true. As I've said before, I think leaders play a big role. I think we play a big role as employees, as employers, and I think we play a big role as citizens. So what's one piece of advice you might share for people around their responsibility within this as citizens and as workers?
For me, I think it's maybe two things. One would be to commit to continual learning for yourself. You've got to get plugged in and stay plugged into what's happening, because this stuff is, it's going to get crazier before it gets cleaner. And so just, I know it's exhausting. I know the change is incessant. I get it. Find a way though to stay plugged into what's going on. So you don't, cause you don't, I don't think you want to get left behind in this time. And also we need you. Like we need you to stay plugged in. And that maybe leads to my second point, which is, I think the way you get plugged in is probably on the citizen side. So I'm glad you said that, Usha, because I think there's actually very little we can do to impact Sam Altman at OpenAI, right? He doesn't take my calls. So they're going to do what they're going to do, and they are playing by the rules of capitalism, exactly to your point. What we can do, though, is we do still live in a democratic kind of universe, and the power in that universe is with the people. And so I think the more we're going to probably need to affect this change from the citizen, political, governmental side. And so we need you to get plugged in and involved there too. These boundaries that we used to think were separate of, you know, of business and politics, living in tidy little corner, like that is just not true anymore. So we need to get involved and try to help build the world that we want. So that would be my thoughts. What are your thoughts on this?
First I just want to echo the kind of getting involved as citizens being so crucial in this moment. I would say from a work perspective, I think continue to amplify the skills that make you uniquely human. Like embrace the AI. I definitely think, you know, like use it, play with it. Let it make your life easier and easier. And I think there's so much space to actually lean into what we've called soft skills for the longest time, you know, things like empathy, listening, making good decisions. I think we need a lot more of that. So I would say upskill yourself on that. Yeah. And as leaders, treasure that, incentivize that. And then on the citizen end, I think this is really a call for us to build community, to connect with each other more, to kind of build more of that like local fabric. And really, we've just become so isolated as a society. And I think that's part of what really ails us. And it's I think that's part of the psychological underpinning that's leading to all of these, to greed at its core and scarcity. And I think recommitting to community and to that mindset of who do I serve, who am I in service of, is really a huge part of it.
That's great. I'm going to recommend one more thing before we go here, which is that we rebrand soft skills. So thinking about what you said earlier about these things becoming a premium, I think we need to rebrand these as premium skills. Honestly, though, I think this is the stuff that becomes like a premium in the very near future. That's the stuff that we
and it always has been. We just haven't valued it as such. Lovely. Well, Josh, thank you so much. What a rich conversation. I'm excited for people to listen in and share some of their insights on what this inspires.
Yeah. Thank you for suggesting it, Usha. This is so fun. I'll talk to you anytime.
Thanks, Josh.